achieving revival audiences when they see it. I believe, I try and make films for the long term, but I'm just going to go out of date in a couple of years, or 10 years. Some of my films have been, considered to be so retro at the time that they were made, that people didn't quite catch on, but it just took a future generation to catch up with it, so to speak. Sometimes, retro can actually be ahead of its time.
In this year, they have the film shown at the Melbourne International Film Festival this year.
I wish I had been there. I was at the Brisbane International Film Festival. I was there for the beginning of MIFF. I was there for the first 5 days as their guest. They brought me in for the premiere of Not Quite Hollywood and to be interviewed as one of the subjects of Not Quite Hollywood, as there were many other people being interviewed. But I was around for 5 days. I hosted a screening of Turkey Shoot, and it was part of a panel in Melbourne, and then I went up to Sydney and did a number of interviews there, and then went on to Brisbane and did interviews, and was part of a panel there, and also hosted the screenings of Hong Kong and Turkey Shoot. So, but I really would have liked to have seen the Melbourne audience respond to it. Were you there?
Yeah, it was good.
How full was it?
It was pretty full, actually. Like, it was, it looked packed, and the print that they used, the Greater Union print, so.
Oh, yes, well, the Greater Union were the distributors who, did not handle it very well. They were in those sort of last days of distribution before they handed the job over to Roadshow. Roadshow sort of, the theatrical release was over by then. Roadshow then, just put it out on DVD, or sorry, they put it out on video, because, when the box office is low, you tend to have high expectations for the video. So they just sort of threw it out, and never subsequently thought it was worth doing a DVD. But now I think that DVD is going to be done, and I've narrated the American DVD, which you can get from eBay, and for a nice transfer, too. I'm curious to learn from you what the audience response was. Did they get the jokes?
They did get the jokes. People were actually laughing in the cinema, which is good. Like, people got what it was about.
Good. What did they think of the 80s music?
I didn't get any responses, but I assume, like all films, I think that it's
I saw it as a very 80s movie, even though the drive-ins were beginning to die, and we filmed in a dead drive-in that had closed, the Matraville drive-in near Cornell in Sydney, and it was ultimately leveled and became blocks of apartments. I wanted to capture that, the zeitgeist of the 70s, the 80s, well, that sort of kind of quasi-punk, Eurythmics music, and the feeling of the 80s in many respects. So I was limited by budget as to what music I could get. Music, as you know, film can be very expensive if you don't compose it yourself. If you want to buy other people's music, they can sometimes hold you to ransom. But we did a deal with a record company, and they said, hey, you can use up to 45 seconds at a time of any of these songs for a few thousand dollars here or there. And so we got we got some hunters and collectors. We got a few bands that actually had some longevity. So, and I listened to all their music, as an anti-hero or a little guy, you know. There isn't enough action, you know, etc. You know, many criticisms of it. So they threw it away. New World did not throw it away because they thought, well, God, if we can only fix this bloody language problem. but they eventually put it out with, the Australian version. There was only 300 prints, admittedly, but they did okay. They got their PMA back, and then the film was nicely set for video, where I think it did about 45,000 copies in America, which, as they were selling them wholesale, for $50 each, then the retailer would be buying them for $100 each, and then passing them on to the public for $5 a play or whatever, $5 a day. They did okay. When I made the highest selling direct video of 1995 in America, that was Leprechaun in Vegas, Leprechaun 3. So you can imagine the kind of coin you can get back just by a video release hitting anywhere close to 50,000 copies. So New World did fine, and they sold it to every country in the world for something. Then the film started to get a bit of a cult following. Look, I wouldn't say it's in the same league as Donnie Darko, but Donnie Darko failed dismally at the American box office because it wasn't properly handled. Then somehow it caught on in England, and then the British distributors didn't dump it, didn't say, oh, it failed in America, so I'm dumping it. So suddenly it started to take off in territories with a more sophisticated sensibility. And actually, Australia is, in fact, a territory with a more sophisticated sensibility. But you have to carefully market to that sensibility. Just in the way that Mad Men, I think, are very cleverly marketing, not quite Hollywood at the moment. It's not just a movie geeks documentary. It is a great date movie. You can take a girl or a guy or whatever to that for a night out in Australia, and there's so much to talk about afterwards. So many interesting social issues, gender politics issues, cultural issues, etc. And it's just a whole lot of fun. That's the main thing. It is extremely funny. So I applaud the film, not just because it's kind to me, but the main film. But back to Dead End Driver, it has developed a following. Kill Bill was being shot, Kill Bill 1 was being shot in Beijing, and Quentin Tarantino realized that he had an Australian locus puller, Jasmine Ewing, who has since gone on to her named Cactus. He asked her if she'd ever seen Dead End Drive-In, and she said, what's that? And he said, oh, I think somehow he managed to get an Australian video copy sent across to Beijing, and he played it for her and other members of the crew. And that's it. So, that's just, one instance. I mean, the film is, an appreciator of cinema, and I'm one of the to the concentration camps on some Pacific island for rent.
Now they've just sort of realized that they've done, they did a bad mistake, so.
Well, I mean, well, I think every gross moral lapse like that can certainly be called a bad mistake, and it will, yeah, it will bite Australia in the arse financially, because we just simply can't, we can't abandon these people. And now we've subjected them to the horrors of prison camp life, in effect. And, you know, we've psychologically damaged these people whose only wish, whose only fault was to want to get away from an oppressive regime and come to a land that has always represented itself as warm and friendly, full of opportunity for people who wanted to work hard. And that's all these people ever wanted to do. I come from a different political philosophy. I believe the world is one country, and damn all flags and damn all borders, really. I appreciate that's a process that's going to take some time to work itself out, but we are all citizens of the same planet, and the sooner we start thinking on a planetary basis as opposed to a tribal territory basis, the sooner the world will step away from the brink of destroying itself. However, I doubt if your leadership is that interested in hearing politics from me.
I think it's a relevant question, because it raises a relevant point, and still sort of relevant to what was happening here, so.
Well, they're afraid of multiculturalism, but I think multiculturalism is the only future for Australia. We can't be a European enclave in the middle of Asia. You have to recognize that these are your neighbors, and you should invite